This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Anyone familiar with the U.S. criminal justice system has likely heard the expression, when a person gets sentenced to prison, the whole family serves time. And as the number of incarcerated people continues to grow, more families are facing the isolation, the frustration, and the fear that comes with doing time on the outside. Even Sesame Street is addressing the issue.
Alex, are you okay?
You seem kind of sad. Mm-hmm.
Listen, Alex, whatever it is that's on your mind, you don't have to tell us. But we're your friends, and you can always talk to us if you want.
It's just all this talk about my dad and where he is got me really upset.
Oh, because your daddy's away?
And you miss him?
Yeah, but because of where he is, too. My dad's in jail.
In jail?
Bessie Elmore knows firsthand what it's like to deal with having a family member in prison. Her son was convicted of murder 21 years ago. She's been working toward helping people like her ever since. Bessie Elmore is the director and founder of Straight Talk Support Group, and she's here with us to tell us more. Welcome, Bessie. Good to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your efforts to just stay in contact with your son when he was first sent to prison, and he's been moved around since. Tell us a little bit about what that's been like for you.
Well, the travel takes a toll on you going from prison to prison. I've been to a lot of prisons here in North Carolina. You have to prepare yourself for the drive. You prepare yourself to go in for the visit. You prepare yourself to visit, and then you prepare yourself to drive home from the visit. And as much as I've used that word prepare, there's no way you can really prepare.
This ordeal started for you in New Jersey, did it not?
A little bit, and then in Georgia, and then coming here to North Carolina.
Because we should talk about this, the fact that you tend to get moved around an awful lot. You start out in one prison but move to another facility all over the state. How common is it for parents, for family members to be able to stay with their loved one?
It's not that common because, again, it's to travel. It's not only the travel, it's the money and the time. Some visits are during the weekday, so people would have to take off from work. And that's not always an option for some people. Sometimes it's on the weekends, and you have to get up so early in the morning and travel 1.5 to 2 hours for a visit.
What about the I'm just wondering what went through your mind initially when William was convicted. What was going through your mind?
Oh, my goodness. What was going through my mind? First, I thought I was going to die. I couldn't breathe. It was shocking. It was disturbing. It was like somebody was slowly choking the life out of me. Slowly choking the life out of me. That's what was going on in my mind.
Did you have anybody to talk to, a support group or any kind of group, anybody you could talk to about this?
No, just my daughter. And still, talking with my daughter, I was coming from a place of a mother where things that she couldn't understand. And I couldn't understand what she was going through because that was her brother. So we could talk, but we really could not get into a deep conversation. And there was no support group.
Tell us about, then, the origins of your support group. Tell us about the group that you formed and why you started it.
Well, last year, February of 2013, my son had been moved to Orange Correctional in Hillsboro. And I went for the visit. He had made it to honor grade, and that was a biggie. And as I was coming in, I turned and I saw this woman that I knew, Grace Graham, and I went over and hugged her and introduced my son. She introduced her son. And she said to me, "You know, Bessie, give me a call later on." So I said, "Okay, Grace, I'll do that." Sure enough, I did. And she said to me, "You know what, Bessie? you should start something. And I paused and I said, you know what, Grace? I think I will. I'll start a support group. And in March, that's exactly what I did. I started a support group for people like myself to come and talk and share and hear what other people are going through and talk about their frustrations, their isolations, their loneliness, to cry if they wanted to cry, to vent if they wanted to vent. And that's what we did.
Had you been doing any of this along the way, finding individuals? You said, of course, there weren't other support groups, but could you find other mothers, other people in your situation who you could do some of that with?
Oh, yes. Excuse me. A lot of people started calling me, asking me different questions. William was very good at giving my number out, saying, oh, yeah, you can call my mother. Have your mother call my mother. Have your mother, you know, call my mother and talk to her about blah, 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 blah. So I had received plenty of phone calls, letters, people calling me, asking me certain things. And, you know, it really, that support really had started before it started. So, yes.
How did it help William? I mean, you said that a lot of parents, a lot of family members just, they can't do it. You move around a lot. It's expensive. It's a lot of planning. And so I would guess that leaves a lot of inmates without visitors. What's the difference in William's life, and how does it compare with those who don't get visitors?
I think the difference in William's life is that he had a great support system, and he still does. My daughter and I were determined to keep in contact, to keep his morale up, to support him, and to keep our keep us up. Because if he saw that we were down and out, then he would feel that. So we had to encourage one another. And he was my guinea pig, to test my theories, to see by doing this and doing that, to keep his mind occupied, to keep him on point, and to keep him focused.
So you're essentially been doing your PhD research the whole time and then applied that to forming this group. And so I want to just step back then and kind of get a scope and take a look at what this might look like nationally. To get a bigger picture, is senior research sociologist at RTI International, Megan Comfort. She's the author of Doing Time Together, Love and Family in the Shadow of Prison. Welcome, Megan. Good to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been studying the effects and the impact that this has had on prison life and on families. You've certainly heard Bessie's story, and I just wonder how common that is, and maybe you can give us some of the scope as you looked at this story nationally.
Right. Yes. Thank you so much, Ms. Elmore, for sharing your story. And as I was listening to you, I was thinking how much that resonated with the work I've done here in California and colleagues of mine have done in various states across the nation. And I think it's very striking how common it is to hear family members expressing exactly what you were just discussing, all the different anxieties and fears and worries and concerns and the visiting hours and all of these things. And you know, I think it's so important, the work that you're doing, and in general, for us to be bringing to attention that when we put one person in the criminal justice system, it's not just that one person. That person is connected to other people, and those people are going to go through a lot as well.
What happens? What's the impact on the communities that, you know, when Bessie goes back home and other families go back home, what impact does that have on those communities?
It can have a really big impact. I mean, again, when we hear what she was just describing in terms of, you know, people devoting a lot of resources to getting to prisons that are far away, people who are spending their weekends doing that kind of travel and that visitation as opposed to other things that we think of as people being able to do on the weekends. When you think on a community level, a lot of communities are particularly hard hit by incarceration, and so you might have a lot of the, it's particularly men who tend to be incarcerated. Most of the vast majority of our nation's prisoners are male, and so you have a lot of men who might be pulled out of those neighborhoods for periods of time. And then quite often it is women, mothers and sisters and partners who are providing the support to those men. So again, thinking about what that means on a daily level is really profound.
And you spent over a decade at San Quentin with women visiting their partners and interviewed many of them. What did you find?
I really found, again, what I was saying before, that, you know, the impact on family members is tremendous, and it's something that we often don't think about right away. I heard many stories, and I would say there are the common threads of all this, you know, anxiety and worry and difficulty and challenge, and yet those play out in very different ways for different people. So there's a lot of complexity. A lot of different types of people are affected by incarceration. So again, people often have a lot of stereotypes around prison, but we need to break those stereotypes because the research is showing that a vast, you know, a much broader range of people are affected. And one thing to note, too, is a lot of my research focuses on health impacts, and I think that there's more and more work in this area. I have some colleagues, Hedy Lee at the University of Seattle and Christopher Wildeman at Cornell University, have been doing some great work really looking at the impact on people's health, again, from the things that Ms. Elmore was just describing, you know, feeling that you can't breathe, getting up early in the morning to go to a prison. These things take a toll.
I want to take a look at this story from yet another perspective now and introduce the executive director of Our Children's Place, Melissa Radcliffe. Melissa, welcome. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Tell us about your group.
So we are a statewide agency that works to really encourage communities to think about what does it mean for children when their parents go to prison. And we've broadened that conversation slightly to even look at what does it mean for a child who's there when a parent is arrested? And then what does it mean for children when parents come back when they're released from prison, whether they're coming back into a child's home or back into a child's life in a different way than maybe they were while they were in prison and possibly even before they went to prison.
And what does it mean?
It can mean a variety of things. Life goes on while folks are in prison. And children get older and they grow up and their lives change and they may not be the little one that they were when their parent went to prison. So there's some concerns around, is my parent the one that sets the rules? Do I have to follow the rules? Do they still love me? Do they want to be back with me? How has their life changed? Are they any different? Will they be going back? Should I have to worry that they may do something that will land them back in prison? So from a reentry perspective, that's a concern that we need to look at that. And then while parents are in prison is many of the things that Bessie talked about, but feeling a sense of shame or stigma or that I'm alone. I'm the only child that's going through this. This whole Sesame Street resource is one way of pointing out that children do feel the effects and that they may be thinking they're to blame. If I had done better in school, if I hadn't misbehaved, if my mom loved me more, then she wouldn't be where she is, or my dad wouldn't be where he is. That it somehow is my fault for what happened.
Makes me wonder about the impact on siblings as well. Bessie, you talked about having a daughter. How did you have to navigate these worlds of having a daughter on the outside, a son on the inside, even just the way you had to pay attention to both? That's always a struggle for parents.
You know, you're absolutely right. And excuse me. At one point, my daughter said to me one day, she said, you know what, Mom, I'm still here. Because my whole focus was on William and what was going on with him. And it didn't seem like I was neglecting her, but she said, I'm still here. So it does have effect on the siblings. And William and Cheryl were very, very close. Even though they're 4 years apart, they were very close. So it had an impact on her, too.
Megan, I wonder, is that also a part of the story that you were investigating, the families, children and siblings who are on the outside as well as parents?
I first came to this work really with a focus on partners, so on wives and girlfriends and other intimate partners of people who are incarcerated. And as I've been continuing to work in this field, my colleagues and I have been trying to open up more because we are getting a clearer picture that indeed incarceration will affect, you know, anyone who has a relationship with that incarcerated person.
You know, it's interesting to think about this again as you think about the broadening scope. This is a country with the largest incarceration rate in the world. And the impact and the ripples it has on communities, we have to think about the victims' families as well. There might be a direct victim and then families and whole communities that may have been affected by, if it was a break-in, a sense of security that was breached. You have all these families, and it's interesting, and Megan, I'll put this question to you, though. I know it doesn't bear directly on your research. The fact that our criminal justice system doesn't bring victim and perpetrator together, that there's no kind of reconciliation built into our system, these injured families work in isolation. They're never brought together. It just seems to me that there's no infrastructure for healing either for victims or for perpetrators' families, for the extended communities.
Mm-hmm. I very much agree with what you said. And another point to add to that is, you know, we tend to, again, kind of put people on one side of the fence or the other, but it's quite often that someone who has perpetrated a crime was him or herself the victim of at least one crime, if not many crimes, over time. So what you're speaking about in terms of healing and building infrastructure is so important, because people actually can fall on both sides of this, you know, when the law keeps them very separate. In fact, often one family is quite affected by all of these issues.
Melissa, I would guess that you found some of this in working with families who have people on the inside who have been both victim and now related to people on the inside.
It is. We know that quite a few women in prison have an abuse history. So they, in fact, have been on, as Megan said, both sides of the fence on that. But we do know that families who have been victimized obviously feel the effects, the families that have the perpetrator. But there is not oftentimes an opportunity for those two to connect and to figure out what the impacts have been. And I think of a child who maybe was not the victim of, say, child sexual abuse. Another family member was. So what is it, again, like for the child to think, well, gosh, that's still my mom or my dad, but they also did some pretty bad things, and my family is feeling the effects on both sides of it.
We're talking about the impact of incarceration on the wider community today on the state of things. Megan, Comfort, are there specific demographics that deal with this issue in terms of support groups, and have other support groups emerged around the country?
Well, I'm really heartened to hear about the work that Bessie Elmore is doing, because more and more, again, the research is showing that one of the most beneficial things for people in this experience is to be able to have other people who have gone through the same situation. Katie Kramer and Barry Zach are with the Bridging Group, which is a consulting group, and they've done some wonderful work around the country looking at some tiny groups and programs that have started up, and really just hearing repeatedly from people that it's so important to connect with others who have been through the same situation, because, again, the issues are very, very complex. And so unless someone has gone through something similar, it's going to be hard for them to offer the types of support that are necessary.
Bessie, you were going it alone for a long, long time before you formed this group. How has the group helped you?
I think the group has helped me in many ways. One, to be able to share what I've learned over the years and to receive the support from the group, to have them embrace me, to give me the strength to move forward. So it's a give and take. I've received so much more probably from them than I've given to them.
Were there any parts of this story that you weren't even aware of? Again, you've lived so much of it, but as you began to talk with other family members, things that even surprised you about how difficult this was?
Yes. I realized that I was not the only mother that felt the way about the situation. And it gave me a sense of, okay, I wasn't really alone. But at that particular time, I felt that way. So it was empowering to know that there are women out there that feel the same way I do and have walked the same mile that I've walked.
And Melissa, tell us a little bit about your program as well, because part of the program, some of what you do is to actually take children to make visits into prisons, which otherwise might be difficult for them or impossible.
We've been very fortunate to be involved with what we call Parent Day at two facilities, one in Orange County and one in Anson County, where children come in and spend the day with their dads. It's separate from visitation, so it's a day where they can be dads and kids, and they can have lunch and do arts and crafts and play board games and sit and talk and laugh, have pictures taken, but really to focus on that relationship and one more way to support it and enhance it, but also as a way for the men in prison to think about their release and what it's going to be like to be back as a parent on the outside, which may or may not be an experience they had prior to going to prison.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Melissa Radcliffe is the executive director of Our Children's Place. Megan Comfort is a senior research sociologist at RTI International and the author of Doing Time Together, Love and Family in the Shadow of the Prison. And Bessie Elmore is the founder and director of Straight Talk Support Group in Durham. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Coming up next, the music of the Billy Jonas Band. Stay with us on The State of Things.